Most leaders are extraordinarily good at execution. They're disciplined, they show up, they work hard, they manage their time, their team, their calendar, their commitments. They are, by most measures, effective in the sense that they accomplish what they set out to accomplish with reasonable consistency and efficiency. And a significant number of them, somewhere in the middle of all of that effective execution, arrive at a question they were not expecting. Is this actually what I wanted to build? Not because they failed, because they succeeded. And the success revealed that the destination they were working toward was not one that they would have mattered most to them when they looked back from the far end of their lives. They climbed the ladder efficiently, competently, faithfully, and when they reached the top, they discovered the ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. The most important leadership question is not, how do I execute better? It's, am I building the right thing? And that question has to be answered before the execution begins. Not at the end of a career when the building is already done. That's what this episode is about. And it's all right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts Podcast.
You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. Welcome back to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Bruce Ritter alongside Charles Russell, and this is Episode 25 of Season 3. I want to greet you today. We're a little late this week on our podcast. Normally we record on Monday morning, but we had a few things happen yesterday that caused us to have to delay till today. We're really glad to be with you. And again, we believe we have a wonderful episode today on the Five Gifts Podcast. Charles, what's happening?
Well, I'm trying to get my brain to function this morning. It's just not wanting to cooperate. So it's a typical day for me. Doing good, and had a good weekend, and all the things that go with that. Into a new week, and just ready to talk about some more leadership principles here on the Five Gifts Podcast.
That's great. Wow. We got 4th of July ahead of us. We have some plans around here. Hope Charles, you've got some good plans where you are to celebrate our nation's 250th.
Absolutely, a big year, momentous year. So we're going to do some things as a family, and we'll celebrate and do our best to contribute to the patriotic sense that this tree. Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about leadership. Let's get into our episode today. Personal leadership often is determined by asking the right question. So, what is the destination I'm actually trying to reach? What does the end look like? Am I building toward that end in the decisions that I'm making today?
Yeah, I think that last point you made about thinking about the end, we want to talk today about beginning with the end in mind when it comes to your leadership. And we're not talking about the end of your life. We're talking about really the where's your leadership taking you? What's your vision reality, and how are you moving to that? And so we think beginning with the end in mind is foundational, not just to personal development and your leadership of an organization, but really as a leadership discipline. And we're going to cover the principle of what we call two creations. And I think you'll find that pretty fascinating. And we'll talk about a visualization exercise that reveals what you actually value at the deepest level, the critical distinction between leadership and management, and even some questions that sit at the center of your life and what the center of your life is actually producing. And also the practice of writing a personal mission statement that functions as a genuine constitution of your leadership life.
Well, before we get into the practical tools, we need to establish the foundation principle that makes all of them care. Because without this principle, Personal vision is just wishful thinking. But with it, it becomes a leader's life. So one of the most important leadership principles to understand is this. Everything is created twice. Right. So first inwardly, then outwardly. First in vision, then in reality. First in conception. So before there's a building, there's a blueprint. Before there's a sermon, there's revelation. Before there's church culture, there's a pastoral conviction. And then before there's an organization, there's an internal picture of what it meant, of what is meant to become. And that's the principle of two creations. There's always a first creation. That'd be the internal one. The mental, the spiritual, conceptual. Then there's the second creation, the visible one, the practical, the physical, and operational. The first creation is the design. The second creation is the manifestation. And those two are never equal in weight. The first, always. If the blueprint's flawed, then we understand that the building will carry that flaw. Doesn't matter how gifted the builder is, how efficient the systems are, doesn't matter how fast the work gets done. If the design is wrong, the visible outcome will eventually reveal that. And that's true in ministry as well. A church doesn't accidentally become what it becomes. It's shaped by what the leaders first saw. So if the vision is centered on discipleship, then the systems are going to reflect formation. If the vision is on performance, the systems will reflect production. If the vision is centered on personality, the culture will revolve around the leader. Everything starts in the first creation. And this is deeply biblical. Hebrews tells us that what is seen was made from what is unseen. That's not just creation theology, that's leadership theology. The invisible always precedes the visible. God conceived before he spoke. Jesus declared the end from the beginning. And every leader is doing the same thing, whether they realize that or not. Apostolic leaders are building from a vision. Prophetic leaders are guarding a picture of covenant faithfulness. Pastoral leaders are shaping the internal health of people. Teachers are building understanding before behavior. And evangelists are carrying a vision of redeemed humanity. So the five gifts are all participating in first creation. That's why clear internal vision matters. What you see inwardly will eventually shape what you build outwardly. And here's where most leaders get into trouble. They inherit their first creation. They inherit definitions of success from culture, from family, from church history, programs, other systems, from denominational expectations, even from social media. And without ever stopping to examine it, they start building, executing faithfully, working hard, growing fast, but toward a destination they never consciously chose. And that's dangerous, because inherited vision can become unconscious bondage. And many leaders wake up years later realizing, I built something, but I'm not sure this is what God assigned me to build. And that's why beginning with the end in mind, it truly matters. It forces you to stop before momentum carries you too far, to examine the blueprint, to ask hard questions, clarify the assignment, and then to build intentionally, because if you don't define success biblically, culture will define it for you.
Charles, I think you talk about something that's critical. I think it's something that happened. It comes on the leaders, I think, before often we realize it, that their pressures of the current organization that maybe you inherited, that you walked into, you were elected as a pastor, perhaps, to begin to lead, and you're coming up against a lot of history and a lot of expectations, even in your portfolio as a leader. And a lot of times that can be pretty challenging. And that, you know, there's a real science, or really maybe more of an art to honor history while pursuing what's fresh and new and clearly, you know, your assignment as a leader, that as you sense what God has sent you there to do. I think one of the most powerful ways to examine that first creation that you mentioned is to begin by uncovering what you truly value and what you're actually building toward, and also what you want your leadership to leave behind. And we can use what we call the successor exercise. Sometimes the clearest way to understand what you're building is to ask someone else, ask what they're going to inherit when you're gone. So let's talk about the successor exercise. And when we talk about this, what we're asking is, how can we identify what actually matters? So here's the exercise. Find a quiet place. Give yourself enough time to actually do this. Give yourself some mental space where you can think, you can begin to engage this thought. And just imagine that, let's say 3 years from now, 4 or 5 years from now, you're stepping away from your current leadership role. Maybe you're transitioning out of a pastorate into a new season of ministry, something different. Maybe you're handing off a business. Maybe you're moving into a new season of life. Maybe God is shifting your assignment. And now imagine the person stepping into your role after you, your successor. I think this is highly relevant, especially in a day where more and more pastors seem to be raising up their successor. The question you want to ask is what do you want them to inherit? Not what do you hope they manage, what do you hope they inherit because you built it well. Sit with that question. Do you want them to inherit a healthy culture or a fractured one? Do you want them to inherit trust or suspicion? Do you want them to inherit clear vision or organizational confusion? Do you want them to inherit empowered people, or are they going to get exhausted people? Do you want them to inherit systems that equip or systems that merely sustain? And so for the local church, you want to ask, what spiritual climate am I leaving behind? Did I build disciples? Or is the person coming after me going to be faced with a bunch of attendees that have low commitment? Did I equip saints? Or did I create dependency on the leaders above them? Did I cultivate the five gifts in others? Or did I centralize everything around myself or maybe my leadership team? And so what I haven't really created are the saints in the body of Christ that are equipped to serve. Maybe for the marketplace, if that's your context, you could ask, what kind of team am I handing over to my successor? Did my leadership increase people's capacity? Did it create clarity, health, and trust, or did it consume people for outcomes? And maybe on a personal level, you could ask, what kind of person is stepping away? Did leadership deepen my character? Or did it hollow me out? Did my marriage grow stronger while I built this? Excellent question to ask. Did my children experience my presence or only my ambition? So again, these are tough questions, and you need to create the space to sit with them and ask them honestly. And I think the reason this exercise is so revealing because it forces a different definition of success. Not simply what did I accomplish, but really what remains because I was here. And that is a deeper test of leadership, because success is not just what you build. Success is what can endure without you. I think most leaders discover that when they do this honestly, that much of what they're investing in is built around immediate output rather than an enduring legacy. You know, our calendars have to reflect urgency. The budget may reflect growth, but the culture may not reflect sustainability. And that gap is huge. It's important, not for guilt, but for distinction, for clarity, for precision. Because the gap oftentimes reveals whether your current decisions are building something transferable or merely temporary. And that changes the evaluative question. not is this producing results, which how many of us have thought from week in and week out, am I producing results? Or am I being efficient? The real question is, the evaluative question is this building something that can outlive me? The question is at the heart of beginning with the end in mind. Mature leadership always thinks beyond itself. Mature leaders build with succession in mind. We equip with multiplication in mind. We lead with legacy as the measure, not the results.
Well, what a powerful question you bring up, Bruce. Is this building something that can outlive me? I think that needs to be at the heart of wondering and how we're building. And so, man, excellent, wonderful job. Really, all right, question. And so, the successor exercise surfaces something every leader in ministry and in the marketplace eventually has to confront. There's a difference between building something that depends on you and building something that can continue beyond you. That takes us into one of the most important distinctions in leadership. It's between leadership and management. Now, management is doing things right. Leadership is doing the right things. Those two sentences are easy to agree with and surprisingly difficult, because in practice the pressure to manage, you know, to execute efficiently, to hit the week's targets, to solve problems, to on the earth, it's constant and it's immediate. The work of leadership, things like stepping back to examine whether the direction is right, or questioning whether the goals being pursued are the right goals, asking whether the organization is in the right jungle, is always deferable. So it's always more present, and the deferral accumulates until a leader who was once genuinely visionary has become primarily a manager of a system they've stopped questioning. Stephen Covey's analogy is precise. He would say, picture a team of workers clearing a jungle. The producers are on the ground with their machetes, cutting through the undergrowth, making progress, moving forward. And the managers are right behind them, sharpening the machetes, developing more efficient cutting techniques, writing the policy manual for underbrush removal, organizing the schedule to maximize productivity, and you know, everyone's working hard. Everyone is moving forward. And the leader climbs, he surveys the landscape and he calls out, "Wrong jungle!" You know, and how defeating and deflating is that? Look, at the producers aren't failing. The manager's not failing. Everybody's doing their job, but the first creation, the destination, the direction, the answer to the question of what jungle are we supposed to be, never established with sufficient clarity, or it was established and then quietly drifted as the church replaced the discipline to lead. Look, in the local church, this looks like at running programs, at managing volunteers or planning services, even, you know, executing the weekly rhythm of congregational life. While the fundamental question of actually being formed into goes unexamined for years. The management's excellent. However, the leadership question should be deferred indefinitely. So in the marketplace, it looks like operational efficiency increasing while the foundational questions of purpose, who does this organization serve? What does it exist to contribute? What kind of culture is it building? Those kind of things are crowded out by the quarterly pressure of the bottom line. Leadership's the first creation. Management is the second. But both are necessary, but in the absence of genuine leadership, genuine, examined, consciously held first creation, management is just efficient movement in an unexamined direction. Yetis are sharp. The question of which jungle has never been answered.
That's a great analogy. I've always loved that one from Stephen Covey. And Charles, you did a great way of connecting that both in the church and the marketplace. I think underlying the distinction between leadership and management is also a more personal question, one that determines the quality of every first creation a leader produces. It's the question of center. What sits at the center of your life? Because whatever's at the center is what produces your security, it shapes your guidance, it develops your wisdom, it drives your power to act. And, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that most leaders don't spend a lot of time examining their center with real honesty. So let's think about what's at the center of your life. Every person, every leader organizes their life around something, and there is a center. It's that fundamental source of identity, security, direction. Whether it's been consciously chosen or quietly defaulted into, and that center is not neutral. It produces specific outcomes, specific vulnerabilities, and specific distortions in the leader who lives from it. Now, some leaders are spouse-oriented or family-centered. Their sense of security and well-being is so dependent on the health of those relationships that any turbulence in that area of life can destabilize everything else. Their emotional state tracks the state of the relationship rather than the state of their own formed character. And then some leaders are money-centered or success-centered. I don't mean that in a negative way, but their sense and identity and worth is tied to those kind of metrics. So when the numbers are strong, they feel secure, but when the numbers decline, something more than the organizational health is threatened. Their inner life fluctuates with their net worth or their attendance figures. Some leaders do the same thing with work or ministry. Their identity is so completely invested in their role and their output that they have effectively become the function they perform. And so outside of what they produce, they're not quite sure of who they are. And this produces a specific kind of drivenness that looks like passion from the outside and can feel from the inside increasingly hollow. Some leaders are approval-centered. Their guidance system is really based on how other people respond to them. They read the room constantly. They calibrate their positions to what they think will be received well and experience genuine criticism as something close to an existential threat. And their internal weather really tracks the social weather around them. Now, each of these centers provides what I think Stephen Covey calls phantom security. That's a sense of stability that's entirely contingent on conditions that are outside the leader's control. And when those conditions shift, and they always do, that phantom security evaporates. Now, the alternative is a principle-centered life. That's the life where security is grounded not in what's happening around the leader, but in what is true about the leader's character and the timeless values they've examined and chosen to live from. Principle-centered security doesn't fluctuate with attendance numbers, market conditions, the approval of critics, or the state of any relationship. It is the stable, precise manner of life that's contingent on what those things in life that can't be taken away. So if we talk about the dimensions of that stability, I think we can look at them. Number one would be security. That's a settled sense of worth and identity that doesn't depend on external validation. I'd say the second thing is guidance. That's that internal frame of reference. We've talked a lot about maps, those internal maps, and so we're kind of recalling that, but those accurate maps of reality that provide direction when circumstances can be ambiguous. Then wisdom. You know, wisdom is the capacity to see how pieces relate to the whole, to hold complexity without being destabilized by it, to make decisions that account for more than just the immediate and the obvious. And then power, not positional authority, but genuine generative capacity, the ability to act from chosen values rather than react, from conditioned impulses. Now, again, these four dimensions, they compound over time in principle-centered leaders in a way that they cannot in a leader whose center is contingent. The security deepens, the guidance becomes more reliable, the wisdom accumulates, the power to act with genuine integrity under genuine pressure grows, it matures, and this is what sustainable leadership can look like at the level of the internal life.
Yeah, and if a principle-centered life is the goal, then you know there's a specific and powerful practice for building it. One that functions as a personal constitution, a stable reference point against which every significant decision can be evaluated. We're talking about the personal mission statement. And it's worth being precise about what it is and what it is not. So, a personal mission statement is a catchphrase that you put on a coffee mug or a piece of inspirational language that you know you revisit when life gets. It's much deeper than that. A personal mission statement is a kingdom constitution. It's an articulation of your calling, of your character, and your contribution under Christ. It answers three foundational questions. It answers, who am I becoming? What has God assigned me to build? And what will govern how I build it? So that matters, because in fivefold leadership, clarity of assignment is everything. Apostolic leaders build, prophetic leaders discern, pastoral leaders shepherd, teaching leaders establish, and evangelistic leaders mobilize. So, you know, if you don't have clarity about your own, it can become reactive instead of intentional. You can spend years functioning in your grace while drifting from your assignment. A mission statement, it anchors you. It gives you a stable internal framework when pressure rises, when criticism comes, even when opportunities multiply. The truth is, not every open door is your door. Not every need is your assignment. Not every opportunity is obedience. A mission statement helps you to discern the difference. Think about it this way. In the excuse me. In the same way the Constitution governs a nation through seasons of crisis, your personal mission statement governs your inner life through seasons of uncertainty. It gives you a standard when emotions are high. It gives you alignment when demands are competing. It gives you language when identity feels under pressure. And for five leaders, our gifting often places us in high demand environments. So when people are pull on apostles for vision, prophets for insight, pastors for care, teachers for instruction, evangelists for momentum. And without clarity, those demands can really fragment one's soul. And a healthy mission statement has three parts. The first is character. It's not what you want to accomplish, but becoming in Christ. Before Jesus sent the disciples out, he first called them to be with him, being always received. This is the internal formation piece. Am I becoming faithful, humble, courageous? Hey, how about spirit-led? So that'd be the first piece of this, our character. Second would be contribution. In other words, what is your kingdom assignment? What are you called to build? What are you called to strengthen, to restore, to equip? For an apostolic leader that may be pioneering and establishing, again, for a prophetic spirit, could be protecting spiritual integrity. For a pastor, it might be cultivating wholeness in people. For a teacher, it could be grounding in truth. And it might be awakening the lost and mobilizing passion or mobilizing mission. Contribution, look, it must be clear. because ambiguity in assignment creates misalignment. So the third piece is convictions. These are the principles and values that govern how you carry. Gifting without conviction becomes dangerous. Power without purity, it corrupts, and influence without humility distorts. Vision without love wounds, and your convictions protect your calling. Writing this requires more than strategic thinking. What it requires is prayerful reflection. It requires listening, requires asking the Spirit, what have you truly called me to become? The success or exercise that we walk through really helps uncover this. What do you want to leave behind? What do you want multiplied after you're gone? That exercise exposes what truly matters. And from there, you begin writing affirmations. Not as wishes, but as a formation. Not, I want to be a better leader, but I lead in a way that equips others, that reflects Christ. You're not saying, I hope to be more patient, but you're declaring, I respond with patience present when pressure rises. And that's important. Formation happens in the direction of repeated identity. So a personal mission statement is not static. It grows, it sharpens, it matures. As your understanding deepens and your stewardship expands, the language may refine, but the core remains. And over time, it becomes stabilizing tools in your leadership life. Not because it always feels comfortable, but because it keeps bringing you back to your assignment, back to your center, back to Christ.
And here's what's critical. When we talk about beginning with the end in mind, we're not just talking about personal discipline. It's also an organizational one, because every church, every ministry team, every business in the marketplace, every family is being shaped by somebody's mission, whether it's clear or not. And that's where personal clarity becomes collective leadership. So let's talk about organizational vision. We might call it the rule of your involvement as a leader. Every local church has a first creation. It's a picture of what the congregation exists to be and do and become. And the question is not whether it exists. The question is whether it was consciously designed or whether it was genuinely owned, and whether it's accurately reflected in the daily decisions and resource allocations of the leadership team. A mission statement developed by the senior leader or the lead team and then communicated downward as the organizational vision is not a first creation that the whole organization will build from. It's a directive that people will comply with to the degree that compliance is required. And compliance and genuine commitment are not the same thing. Compliance produces behavior. Commitment produces culture. And you can't build a sustainable organizational culture on compliance alone. People have to be invested in it. Now, the principle is pretty direct. Without involvement, there's no commitment. This is not a management technique. It's a description of how human beings actually work. People commit to what they have genuinely participated in creating. And it's not because participation makes them feel good, but because genuine participation produces genuine ownership. Ownership is the operative word here. When someone has wrestled with the questions, when they've contributed their perspectives, when they've seen their thinking influence outcome, and arrived at a shared conclusions through a real process, they will carry that conclusion differently than they carry something that was just handed to them. In the local church context, this has profound implications on how vision is developed and how mission is held. A congregation that's been invited into the process of articulating its shared values, that has genuinely wrestled with who they are and what they exist to do and what faithfulness looks like in their specific context, will carry the vision into their daily lives rather than leaving at the church door on Sunday morning. A congregation that's been given a vision will be attentive to it as long as the leader is in the room to reinforce it. Now, what about the marketplace? In the marketplace, organizations that produce genuine mission-driven culture are almost universally the ones where the mission was developed with genuine involvement from the people who are expected to live it. Not endless consensing building that produces paralysis, but genuine engagement with the foundational questions, the real voices in the conversation, and a process transparent enough that people can trace their contribution in the outcome. Again, even on the family level, the family is the most intimate version of this principle. Family values imposed by parents produce children who perform compliance in the presence of their parents. Family values developed with genuine participation by every member, even in age-appropriate ways for the younger members of the household, they produce something closer to genuine formation. So a family mission statement that every member has genuinely contributed to is not a document on the refrigerator. It's shared language on the inside. The shared language of making decisions, navigating conflict, and holding one another to something that everyone has chosen to do to get together.
Well, as we start to bring this episode to a close, let's bring this down into something practical, one immediate and one ongoing. So the immediate would be to do the successor exercise this week. I'm the mean teacher. I'm giving out homework, and so throw your rotten tomatoes at me. But we really want to encourage you, all of us, do successor exercise this week. Not casually, not mentally while you're driving or multitasking, but really carve out some time, sit down, get quiet, and write it out. So be intentional about successor exercise. So imagine, 3 years from now, someone else is stepping into your role, in your church, ministry, in your family. Ask yourself this: what am I leaving behind for them? What am I leaving behind for them? What kind of culture are they inheriting? What kind of people? What kind of systems? What kind of trust? What kind of health? Will they inherit something strengthened by your leadership or something sustained only by your presence? That question is clarifying. And once you answer it, Put it next to your calendar, all right? Put it next to your budget. Put it next to your priorities from the last 30 days. And what's the gap? And remember, the gap tells the truth. It's not to condemn you, but it's to guide you. So that would be the immediate, is do that successor exercise. Now, the ongoing would be this: begin drafting your personal mission statement. Not some kind of polished document. This is a beginning. So start with character. What are you committed to becoming in Christ? As an apostolic leader, or as a pastor, as a teacher, as an evangelist, who are you becoming? What is your kingdom assignment? What has God actually called you to build? And what principles will govern how you carry that assignment? Write it, pray over it, return to it. Let it really shape your internal blueprint. Because what you repeatedly clarify, you eventually.
Charles, what a great summative statement on the two creations again. I love that. What you repeatedly clarify is what you will ultimately build. And here's the question worth carrying from this episode. Think about it. Leaders, is your ladder leaning against the right wall? Are you in the right jungle? Not are you climbing, not are you busy, not are you even successful, but are you building the right thing? Because you have sharp systems. You can have those and still be in the wrong jungle. You can have momentum, but still be drifting. You can have growth and still miss your assignments. That's why beginning with the end in mind isn't a one-time exercise. It's a leadership discipline. It's a spiritual discipline. The ongoing act of recalibrating your life around what matters most, around Christ, around your calling, around your legacy, around your stewardship. And if this conversation has helped you today, we'd love to ask you to do four things. First of all, like the episode, follow the podcast, share it with another leader, pastor, entrepreneur, a peer, a team member, and subscribe to it so you don't miss the next conversation. We're building a community of spiritual leaders who care as much about formation as they do function. And if you want to help, if you want to help clarify your own mission, if you need some help there, if you want to strengthen your leadership culture or build healthier fivefold leaders and systems in your local church, connect with us. We'd love to talk with you. You can reach out to Charles at charlesrusselltraining.com and charlesrussellministries.com. You can reach me at coachingcardia.com. Now, next episode, we're moving into one of the most practical disciplines of leadership, and that's putting the first things first. Knowing your destination matters, but ordering your life to actually get there matters just as much. Remember, Christ gives us the gifts, but it's our character that sustains them and vision that directs them. And we'll see you next time right here on the Five Gifts Podcast.
You've been listening to the Five Gifts Podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.